Okay, good. So we will continue in following in the Buddha's footsteps. Yeah, we've done the section on refuge already and went into the qualities of the three jewels at that time. And then since the Dharma jewel consists of the three higher trainings, then the book is going into, you know, an extensive section on the three higher trainings. So we've covered the higher training in ethical conduct, and now we're on the second one, the higher training in concentration. And we're in the middle of that, so people who are just coming in now, we talked about the five hindrances, which are common to all the Buddhist traditions. Everybody mentions those. We've talked about objects to choose for generating serenity. And now we're in a section talking about the faults of that impede attaining serenity. And this is from the one of Maitreya's texts, distinguishing the middle and the extremes. So it's very similar to the five hindrances, but it's also a bit different too, and points out some things that the five hindrances don't point out as specifically. Okay, so we have, I just want to get you in the right place. Okay, so there's five hindrances and eight antidotes to them. So we have covered two of the hindrances. Okay, so the first one was the hindrance of laziness, which means we can't get ourselves to the meditation cushion. So the antidotes for that were faith in the method to attain serenity. The faith gives us aspiration to attain serenity. That encourages us to have effort. And then with effort, we develop what's called pliancy, which is a flexible mind that can also affects the body and makes both of them very serviceable for meditation. So that's the first fault. Then it has those four antidotes: faith, aspiration, effort, and pliancy. So we've done that. The second one is, second hindrance, is called forgetting the instruction. And its antidote is mindfulness. Okay, so here, mindfulness does not mean listening to an app playing very soothing music, okay? And it does not mean being mindful that you're angry and you want to punch somebody, okay? So it's not just that. It's here in the context of developing concentration, mindfulness means remembering the object, because the word for mindfulness is the same one as for remembering or memory. Yeah, so mindfulness of the object is you remember the object so that then you can keep your focus and your attention on it. Okay, and okay, so the second hindrance was forgetting the object, meaning when we meditate, our mind goes off to something else, okay? And mindfulness is what keeps the mind anchored to the object. We bring the mind back and anchor it on the object, okay? So then there's three more hindrances. I'll just list them and then we'll do our preliminary prayers. Okay, the next one is two of them together. They sound opposite, but their antidote is the same. Okay, so they're restlessness and laxity. I'm sure you're very familiar with them. Yeah, some people may be restlessness more, and some people are already sound asleep and don't even hear the word laxity. So, okay. And their antidote is called introspective awareness. It's a mind that checks, is your mind focusing on what you want it to be focusing on, or is it in la-la land somewhere? Okay. Then so that's the third fault, that those two are put together, and we'll start with those today. The next one is called non-application of the antidote. In other words, a hindrance has arisen, but you don't apply the antidote. Okay, so in a very gross way, what that could mean is, you're focusing on your meditation, and then you start daydreaming about, some grand vacation you're going to go on, or the next retreat you're going to go on, or the teacher that you want to go meet, or the how to plan your trip to India. And your distraction is so interesting that you don't apply the antidote to it. So that's a problem. So that is a fault, yeah? And its antidote is to apply the appropriate antidote. Then the fifth fault is over-application of the antidote. In other words, you've applied the antidote, you've brought your mind back to your original object of meditation, but you keep applying the antidote again and again and again, instead of just meditating and letting your mind stay on the object. So that's a problem. So equanimity is the antidote to that. Okay. Okay. So that's just an introduction to try and put you, the people who are, haven't been following it, to let you know kind of where we're at in terms of this. Yeah. Everything is on online. You can go and listen to many, 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 many hours, yeah, of teachings interspersed with jokes. Yeah, that will keep you awake. Okay, so let's, in the space in front, visualize or imagine the Buddhas. Buddha surrounded by all the bodhisattvas, ourselves surrounded by all the sentient beings. And the sentient beings are really confused. Yeah, they want happiness, but they fight wars, thinking that fighting a war will conquer the enemy and bring them peace and happiness. It doesn't. Yeah, sentient beings want to have enough material wherewithal, but they cheat others and steal from them in order to get more, even though they already have, some of them already have plenty. So sentient beings really need the Dharma. And that's why when we take refuge and generate bodhicitta, we imagine leading them also in turning to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha for spiritual guidance. And we imagine sentient beings generating bodhicitta. I mean, imagine for a moment if the president had bodhicitta. Yeah. One person having bodhicitta can make a big difference. So let's cultivate our motivation. And it said, and I think this is quite true, that we sentient beings want happiness and freedom from suffering and misery, but we continually create the causes for misery and leave behind the causes of happiness. When you think about it, this is a really sad situation. When we look at our own behavior, we see that it's true. We have high ideals, we have good values. But when it's convenient, we forget them. And here it's when it's convenient to our thought of the eight worldly concerns, the mind that seeks only the happiness of this one life. And that mind gives us permission to act in harmful ways towards other living beings, and at the same time think that we're creating the cause for happiness. So this is something to note within ourselves and to apply antidotes to. And when we see it in other people, instead of criticizing them and judging them, to have a sense of compassion, knowing that they follow worldly concerns and the self-centered attitude, because they're really wanting to be happy. In the same way that we do the exact same thing. So rather than judge ourselves and others, or condemn ourselves or others, compassion is the appropriate response. But compassion doesn't mean that we are a softy and just say, yeah, it's okay, no problem. No, because if we want happiness, we have to create the causes for it. And if we want other beings to have happiness, we have to stop harming them. And we have to also attain realizations ourselves and then teach them what the cause of happiness is. And so bodhicitta, that mind aspiring for full awakening for the benefit of sentient beings, is born not only from compassion, but also because we want to directly benefit others in a skillful and wise way. And to do that, we need to attain full awakening. So that's a long-term project, but it's the most worthwhile thing we can do in our lives. So let's take a moment and generate that motivation. Have you noticed that we have really good aspirations? And then we get distracted from them, don't we? Yeah. And what distracts us? Yeah, the worldly concerns. We want to do this really fun thing or this thing that we always wanted to do or have or be. And first we have to do that. Then we'll practice the Dharma. Yeah. Or sometimes, you know, we feel like we've been treated unfairly. And so first I have to, you know, correct things and let people know how good I am. Yeah. A little retaliation doesn't hurt. And then I will, when I've accomplished all of that, then I will practice the Dharma. Yeah. In Indian culture, I don't know if it is, I think also now as well as in previous centuries, the attitude was your first, like 20 years, you're a kid, you're learning, you're playing. The next 20 years, you have a family and you work. And 20 years after that, nowadays you keep going because actually 25 years after that, yeah. And then when you're eligible for Medicare, yeah, and Social Security, then you can practice the Dharma because you'll have so much time. Yeah. And so, you know, Dharma practice just gets put off one thing after another because, you know, I really want to go to Antarctica and see those, I was going to say dolphins, no, pigeons, yeah, penguins. Well, maybe they have pigeons too. Yeah, but I gotta go to Antarctica because it just sounds so cool there. And I want to see everything, you know, and walk on the snow and throw a few snowballs. And yeah, so I really didn't want to go do that. And then, of course, I want to go across the desert in the middle of Australia. Yeah, I want to take a camel and cross the desert walking. Yeah, oh, I saw a movie about somebody who did it. Don't you want to do it too? Yeah. Well, she walked and she had a camel that carried her supplies. And she took her dog, but you could take a cat. Yeah. So we have, you know, these things on our bucket list that, you know, oh, I just really got to do. And then, you know, then I'll renounce. Yeah. Okay. So easily get distracted. Yeah. One of our nuns had the aspiration to teach physics to the monastics in South India, which is certainly very virtuous to do. She was on a verge of going and doing that. And then the Buddha manifested as a car accident. And she said, after that car accident, I better get ordained now. Yeah, did I tell it okay?
I mean, the pandemic too.
You what?
I hit snooze on that one and needed the pandemic to really wake me up.
Ah, okay, but you got yourself here. Yeah. So the pandemic was a blessing for you too. Yeah, yeah. It's interesting how sometimes suffering, many times, with people, it's suffering that makes people look for an alternative, that makes you look for something that is, yeah, going to explain life and give you meaning and purpose. Mm-hmm. Okay, so generating serenity is one of the things that is on the list, yeah, to do. In, you know, in terms of transforming our mind into the Dharma. Okay, so I told you about the first two of the five faults. The next one has two put together. Okay, so it's on page 190 for people who are following the book. Restlessness and laxity and their antidote, introspective awareness. So I'll read from His Holiness. Single-pointedness of mind has two characteristics, okay? Remember these. First one is stability, okay? So stability is the ability to stay on the meditation object without wandering to another object, even if the other object you wander to is something virtuous. Yeah, stability, you have to stay on whatever it is you set out to focus on, okay? So the chief obstacle to stability is restlessness, which scatters the mind towards other objects. Okay? So you're trying to, you know, keep your mind on the meditation object, develop some kind of concentration, and what happens? You think about lunch, you think about, you know, somebody you dated in high school, you think about, you know, those penguins. and then you think about pigeons, and New York has pigeons, and maybe some of those pigeons transmigrate and live with the penguins in the middle. And then you start thinking more and more about how there's one kind of bird that starts out in North America and flies without stopping to somewhere on the other side of the Pacific Ocean, you know, and we start thinking about all of that, you know, very interesting meditation. Yeah, stability on our object of meditation, forget it. You know, we're off in, you know, thinking about other stuff. Or it could be restlessness, could also be anxiety. I have to give the BBC tomorrow. Oh no, what am I gonna say? I don't like giving the BBCs. Actually, I do, because I like sitting up in front and talking to people. But I'm afraid of what they're gonna think about me. What do I do? Do I give a BBC? Yeah. The teacher keeps giving me a dirty look. Yeah, you back there, who's pretending you don't hear. Yeah, the teacher keeps telling me that I give good BBCs, and she does. She gives, see, everybody's head is nodding. She gives excellent BBCs, and she's depriving us of them because she's really good. She'll bring a historical thing or some kind, something from Star Trek, and, you know, and then bring it into the Dharma, and it's really good. Yeah. And she's got a, yeah, thank you for volunteering. You're on tomorrow. yes, you are. Better get prepared. Yeah. Yeah. Don't you remember the phrase, I will do as directed? Amitabha. Amitabha. Yeah. No, she gives very excellent BBCs. Okay. So, restlessness. You know, we're off thinking, anxiety, daydreaming, regret about something we did that we shouldn't have done, or regret because we didn't do something we should have done. You know, imagining all the retreats and teachings you're going to hear as soon as you get out of here, you know. Yeah, just the mind goes all over the globe. And yeah, so that's restlessness. Okay, the other quality of single-pointedness, first quality was stability. Second quality is clarity. Okay, so clarity is vibrancy of the subject. The subject means the meditating mind. Okay. So it's the vibrancy of the meditating mind apprehending the object. Its chief obstacle is, guess what? What prevents your mind from being bright and vivid? Laxity. Yeah. So laxity, lethargy, sleepiness, all those things. Yeah, you start out on the object, and you end up spacey. Okay, so laxity decreases the intensity of the clarity so that the mind's way of apprehending the object becomes loose. Yeah, the object could be there, kind of, but you're not really seeing it clearly. Yeah, your mind's not so interested in it. So because restlessness and laxity have the same antidote, introspective awareness, they are grouped together as the third fault. Okay, so now we're going into restlessness. Yeah, so there's one word for restlessness, there's another word for scattering. Sometimes restlessness is translated as excitement. I don't think excitement is such a good translation, because when you're excited, you're looking forward to something. So I think excitement is included in restlessness, but it's not the meaning of restlessness. Restlessness is much more, yeah, than, oh, good, I hope they serve, you know, chocolate ice cream tomorrow. Yeah, something like that. Okay, so scattering occurs when the mind moves to another object. It may be virtuous, for example, straying from the meditation object of the image of the Buddha to think about precious human life instead. That sounds good, doesn't it? You're visualizing the Buddha and you think, oh, how fortunate I am to have met the Dharma. I have a precious human life, and then you start thinking about that. It sounds good, but it's taking you away from the meditation object that you chose to develop concentration with. So you have to bring your mind back to the object. Okay, the object may be virtuous, it may be non-virtuous, such as plotting our revenge for a harm inflicted on us. It may be neutral, for example, thinking about doing the laundry after the meditation session. Okay. Distraction, yeah, or mental wandering is the same as scattering. Discursiveness or conceptualization, yeah, this in Tibetan is namtok, yeah. Lama Yeshe translated it as superstitious thought. Yeah, here conceptualization sounds quite, or discursiveness. What Namtob means is your mind is going around and around, creating all sorts of stories and, things you want to do, and all your conspiracy theories are categorized under Namdok. Okay, just all this kind of, thinking about what somebody said to you 10 years ago and you're still mad at them, that kind of stuff. Okay, so discursive conceptualization, I'm just going to call it Namtok. Yeah, because the Tibetan word just, conceptualization sounds like you're, you're an intellectual or something, and this is not intellectual. Yeah. So Namtok is similar to scattering and distraction and implies that the mind is filled with mental chatter, useless thoughts, and worries. That's what Namtok is. Mental chatter, useless thoughts, and worries. So sometimes when you people watch, anybody like to people watch? Yeah, you're at the bus, or even here, you're eating lunch and you're just kind of watching. Yeah, it's very interesting when you eat here for a while, you know everybody's eating habits. Yeah, and you could probably even do a skit on them and people would be able to guess who you're, yeah. Because there are some people that just shovel it in. They're over their bowl and they're shoveling in. Yeah. There's other people that chew really fast and make sure to eat lots of things that are crunchy. Yeah. Then there's people who play with their chopsticks. They poke a little here and poke a little there. And it takes them a while to put together one spoonful of something because they want one pea here and two grains of rice. And yeah, you want, yeah. Yeah. So, you live with people, you learn this, yeah. So, so you're in the middle of your meditation and you're thinking about it and you think, oh, this would make a really great skit. Yeah, I can imitate everybody how they eat, the pokers and this, yeah, the slurpers, there's certain people who slurp. And, we have a precept to not look in other people's bowls, but there's no precept against looking at how they eat. There are many precepts about how we should eat, but no precepts about looking at others and how they eat. So it's fault-free. Yeah, right? Yeah? Yeah? No problem. Might even be virtuous, because you want to help these people learn to keep their precepts about how to eat properly. Yeah? So you go up to them and you say, don't you know you don't take a ball of rice and make it into, or you don't take a handful of rice and make it into a ball and pop it in your mouth? There's a precept against that. So don't you do that. Yeah. Yeah. None of you are going to want to ordain after I talk about all of our secrets. But we've been watching how you eat. And you've probably been watching how we eat too. Okay, so mind's filled with mental chatter, useless thoughts, and worries. Yeah, so you can easily think about politics. Kamala said that she's not going to run for governor of California this election. Yeah, how do you feel about that? Yeah, don't you wish that Trump would Useless thought. Okay, worries. What's going to happen? Yeah, the tariffs went into effect at midnight this morning. So Canada has 35% tariff. Yeah. Well, at least it isn't 50. He put 50 on some countries. Yeah, Mexico has 15. Yeah, this little tiny country near South Africa called Lesotho. What? Lesotho? Yeah. Lesotho has 50%. It's an impoverished country. The people are dirt poor. But they, what really helped the economy was they were, had many factories there that sewed clothes that was then shipped to the U.S. and, you know, was very reasonably priced here. But now they have a 50% tariff, and the factories are closing, the people are losing their jobs, and they're already living hand to mouth. Yeah. So, you know, we could go on thinking about all sorts of stuff. Yeah. And some of the stuff, I mean, we should think about the world and the situation of people and, you know, if they're healthy and happy. But we shouldn't think about it during the time when we're developing serenity. Okay. Yeah. And then worries. Yeah, just worry. Yeah. I'm an American citizen. Maybe, you know, he's going to hear what I say online, and he's going to send, you know, ice here. I'll say, go in the refrigerator. It's quite cold there. Ice belongs there. Yeah. I don't know. And then worry. Oh, will they send me to Louisiana? Louisiana. Where there's lots of mosquitoes. At least it's not alligator Alcatraz. Yeah. Okay. So your mind can worry, get distracted, daydream. Yeah. Have you ever noticed that you can go from alligator Alcatraz to Santa Monica Beach in the sunshine in the snap of a fingers? Yeah. Have you noticed that your mind can be drowsy one moment, and as soon as you think of another object, you're awake? Yeah, quite interesting. So restlessness is a type of scattering and distraction. It is associated with attachment because the mind goes to objects of attachment. Yeah. Restlessness, not scattering, is considered one of the five faults because when we try to cultivate concentration, our attention tends to stray towards objects of attachment more than towards other objects. I wonder, does your mind stray more to objects of attachment or more to objects of irritation and anger and judgment? Okay, who goes to irritation, anger, judgment? Who goes to happy things, the objects of attachment? Yeah, it's interesting, kind of evenly. Yeah, well, I'm sure everybody goes to both of them at one time or another, but we certainly have different habit patterns with this. Yeah. Okay, but restlessness is, you know, it's maybe in ancient India their minds went more to objects of attachment, but you know, we were pretty evenly split, I think, about people who went to objects of irritation, anger, judgment. It shouldn't be like this, it should be different. Okay, so that's coarse restlessness. Yeah, so coarse restlessness causes us to lose the meditation object completely and shifts our mind to a desirable object. Food, an attractive person, your red hot sports car, yeah, and a promotion. God, people get excited about promotions. Really, you want a promotion? That means you get a promotion. That means instead of working 8 hours a day, you get to work 12 hours a day. You were promoted to working more hours for the same pay, but a different title. Sounds good, huh? Yeah, you want to do that? You don't want to do that? Yeah, what about you? You want to do that? I can't hear you. What?
I was promoted from finishing residency to a new job, so that's a promotion I want. Yeah.
Okay. You're happy about the promotion?
Yeah, because I can pay off my student loans. I can practice on my own, impact more people that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not work long hours?
Less hours, actually. It's the only promotion I think you can get where you work less hours.
Good. Good going. Okay. So that's coarse restlessness, when your mind goes off to that stuff. Okay. Subtle restlessness. Yeah. So with subtle restlessness, the meditation object is not entirely lost. With coarse restlessness, your mind's off on something else. Subtle restlessness, yeah, the meditation object is not entirely lost, but one part of the mind comes under the influence of discursive thought, and a pleasing object of desire is about to appear to our mind. So it's not a gross thought, you know. You haven't completely gone to the beach with your partner, yeah, but you're kind of like almost there, you know, imagining that, yeah. Yeah, so it's much more difficult to recognize, yeah, because when we're totally off the object, then we can see it. But when with subtle restlessness, yeah, where the mind is in a, you know, a pleasing state, and we're about to go off. Yeah. Okay. So, but one part of the mind comes under the influence of discursive thought, and a pleasing object of desire is about to appear to our mind. So this is compared to water under ice. So the ice is like our concentration. It looks firm, but something else, subtle restlessness, is going on under the surface, and the ice risks cracking. Okay, so that kind of feeling of, yeah, I'll go to some nice object. That's the subtle restlessness. Okay. So subtle restlessness is like a bird with a chained foot. The mind hasn't forgotten the meditation object, but it is unable to fully engage with it. Yeah. It is more difficult to recognize than coarse restlessness because there is still some stability and clarity, but the undercurrent of mind is moving towards another object. Due to attachment. Mm-hmm. This often arises when our focus on the meditation object is too tight. Now that's interesting, isn't it? You would think that when your focus on the object is tight, then you would be able to stay on the object. actually, when your focus is too tight, it makes your mind kind of want to break out of it, so to speak. Yeah. It's like if your body is too tight, you know, you have to, you want to move or something like that. Yeah. Okay. So the undercurrent is moving towards another object due to attachment. So this often arises when our focus on the meditation object is too tight. And that's uncomfortable. So the mind, you know, wants to go towards a pleasing object. If subtle restlessness increases and we lose the meditation object completely, of course, restlessness has arisen. Okay. So the antidote to restlessness is introspective awareness, which is a mental factor that monitors the mind and is a form of intelligence. Yeah. When mindfulness is powerful, introspective awareness comes naturally. And when introspective awareness is strong, mindfulness can easily be maintained. Okay, so when these two often come together when they talk about it. So mindfulness keeps your mind on the object. Introspective awareness checks, am I still on the object? Is the object still appearing? Is my mind still vivid in how it's apprehending the object? Yeah. So the introspective awareness is like one corner of the mind that's monitoring what the rest of the mind is doing. And these two are very, very important for our ethical conduct, for, you know, just being organized in our life. The ability to be mindful, to focus on one object, and the ability to monitor our mind to see if we're off on something else. Yeah, I'm sure we've all experienced starting out a meditation, being on the object, and then at some time later you realize, oh, I'm not on the object. I'm thinking about my eighth grade boyfriend. Yeah, oh, how did he pop up in my mind? Yeah, but your mind is, you know, off to something, and you're not even sure how long you've been off the object until you hear that. And then somebody says, let's dedicate the merit. What merit, you know? Okay. So when mindfulness is powerful, introspective awareness comes naturally. When introspective awareness is strong, mindfulness can easily be maintained. Okay. So mindfulness holds the object to meditation, and introspective awareness assesses whether restlessness or laxity have arisen and are interrupting the concentration. So it's like the Geiger counter. It'll pick up restlessness, it'll pick up laxity. Yeah. While our main focus remains on the meditation object, introspective awareness, like a spy, discreetly surveys the situation from time to time to see if any faults to concentration are present. So it only checks from time to time. If you're focused on the object and then your introspective awareness is just always going, am I on the object? Am I on the object? Am I on the object? Well, you aren't on the object. Yeah. Because you're saying that to yourself. Yeah. So it has to come up from time to time. When it comes up, it sees that we fall into restlessness, laxity, something else, then we must apply the specific antidote to that fault. And so that's why it's important to know the antidotes to the various afflictions and to practice them in our regular meditation. And you can learn them in the Lam Rim, you can learn them in the mind training or thought training teachings, but we need to practice them, yeah, in our daily meditation and you know, apply the antidotes to things that come up in our daily life. Yeah, because then we have some familiarity with them and they become more powerful. Yeah. When we first start applying the antidote, like, you know, what's one of the antidotes to attachment?
Impermanence.
Okay. So, you know, your mind is off on, you know, those penguins and your great trip to Antarctica. And you notice it, and then, you know, oh, what do I do to bring my mind back to the image of the Buddha? Oh, what do I do? You know, and you've forgotten impermanence. But if you've practiced impermanence in your meditation practice, then it's like, oh, I'm off, with attachment has arisen in my mind. Okay, antidote is impermanence. In other words, thinking that whatever it is you're attached to is not gonna last forever. Yeah, sorry to disappoint you, but this is the truth, isn't it? Yeah, whatever we're craving, even we get it, it's not gonna last forever. Yeah, and we may never even get it and spend our whole life looking for it and being dissatisfied because of attachment. Okay, so learning to apply these antidotes is quite important. Okay, introspective awareness is especially important during the early stages of developing concentration. When concentration is more stable, and faults are less likely to arise, introspective awareness does not need to monitor the mind as much. Employing introspective awareness too often may provoke restlessness, so skill is needed in using it. Okay, it's like applying it too often would be like you want to go to sleep, but you keep saying, am I asleep now? Am I asleep now? And you're saying that, you know, interrupts falling asleep. Okay, so although introspective awareness is posited as the antidote to both restlessness and laxity, it is not the actual antidote. Okay, what it does is notice that we're lacking stability or clarity, and it rings the alarm, and then we apply the antidote appropriate for that situation, for that affliction. Okay, but so by observing the mind, introspective awareness identifies the presence of restlessness or laxity and sets in motion the process to remedy it. Lacking introspective awareness is analogous to a burglar entering our house and our having no awareness of theft occurring right under our nose. Yeah, you're spaced out. And, you know, it's so interesting, isn't it? We can get spaced out all by ourselves, but people buy drugs in order to become spaced out. What a useless expense. You know, when you can do it yourself, why buy drugs? I mean, if you really want to be a space case, yeah, just try meditation, you'll space. Yeah. I'm joking, of course, but you know, it's interesting, isn't it? how we think of space, being spaced out is so peaceful. Yeah. And people self-medicate to, you know, to be a space case. Anybody here do that? Not anymore. Okay. So the remedy to coarse restlessness is to bring attention back to the meditation object and renew mindfulness on it. If this does not work, temporarily leave the meditation object and reflect on a topic that makes the mind sober, such as impermanence and death, or the dukkha, the misery of cyclic existence. So those kind of topics bring the energy of the mind down, because when you have restlessness, the mind's energy is up. It's like, oh, an object of attachment, you know, or even an object of anger. I'm really going to think about this and figure out how to retaliate. Yeah. So the mind is too activated. Yeah. So thinking about impermanence and death takes the air out of the balloon. When the mind's energy is lower, return to your original meditation object. Focusing on the breath may also calm restlessness. So for some people, you know, you're maybe focusing on the image of the Buddha. Your mind has, you notice your mind has distraction or restlessness. Yeah, so you can come and, just observe the breath. And then that can help quiet the mind down. Or think about impermanence and death. Yeah, that usually works. If your mind is still very agitated, yeah, pause the meditation session and resume it at another time. So if your mind is just completely chaotic, yeah, then don't torture yourself. Because if you keep pushing, you know, oh, I gotta get my mind back on the object and keep it there at least for 3 minutes, and it keeps getting distracted. And you know, you spend your whole session like that, are you gonna wanna sit down and meditate again later? No, because your mind was just so, you were criticizing yourself and you were unhappy. So you don't want to end a meditation session with a feeling of, I just didn't do it right. I'm hopeless and this is too difficult. Yeah. So if your mind's starting to get like there, take a break, and then come back later. Okay. If these methods do not work and restlessness continues, visualize your spiritual mentor in the form of the Buddha above your head. Yeah. So this is before you break the session, okay? And if you're in a group retreat, don't walk out in the middle of the session. Yeah, you just have to sit there if your mind's going bonkers. Yeah, but try this, okay? His Holiness says, visualize your spiritual mentor in the form of the Buddha above your head. Imagine white light and nectar flowing from his heart, flowing down into your body, purifying all negativities and eliminating all hindrances to serenity, especially restlessness. Request inspiration from the Buddha to gain serenity for the benefit of all sentient beings. So this kind of visualization, you know, with the white light coming into your body and mind, it dispels the darkness of the restlessness, you know. And also if you're getting discouraged, it dispels that. So it makes the mind peaceful, yeah. And then, you know, what he says, request inspiration from the Buddha to help you gain serenity. Yeah. So if your mind is still very agitated, then pause the meditation session and resume it at another time. Okay. Then the remedy for subtle restlessness is to relax the intensity of concentration slightly, but not so much that we lose the object. So here it's interesting again that holding it too tight causes either a subtle or a gross form, a coarse form of restlessness. Yeah. Okay, so the remedy for the subtle restlessness, remember, your mind has some stability on the object, but there's an undercurrent that you're about to go off to another object. So the remedy is to relax the intensity of concentration slightly, but not so much that your mind actually goes off the object. Although restlessness is the chief form of scattering to look out for, whenever your attention wanders to another meditation object, even a virtuous one, bring it back. If you are visualizing the Buddha and your attention scatters to Tara, bring the mind back to the Buddha. Okay? You're meditating on the Buddha and all of a sudden you think, I want to develop, I know the perfect, another really good melody for chanting Om Muni Muni Ma Muni Asoha. Okay, so you're focused on the Buddha. Oh, yeah, I got a good melody. And you go off to that. Okay, so it might be, you know, even something that could be virtuous, but you still have to bring the mind back. Okay. If you are visualizing the Buddha and your attention scatters to Tara, bring the mind back to the Buddha. When contemplating impermanence, if you switch to meditating on the disadvantages of samsara, immediately return to your original object, impermanence. If a camper wants to start a campfire, but becomes distracted by the beautiful scenery, and lets the fire diminish, she must start all over again. So too, if we want to cultivate concentration, but let our attention wander, we have to start anew. While knowing the definitions and functions of the mental factors that interrupt concentration and those that support it is necessary, identifying these in our own experience is essential. So we have to start out learning what they are, and not just the names, but the definitions, so that we know exactly, you know, what it is. And then the real thing is to find it in our own mind when it's manifesting. Okay. You can know the definition. Yes, I know exactly, you know, what subtle scattering is, gross scattering. Yeah, I know it all. Yeah, I've really studied many things. I know all of those things. I don't need to be reminded of it. You've already scattered, haven't you? Yeah. So, you know, it's very important to take what we learn and when we talk about these different mental factors and identify them when they manifest in our own mind. Okay. When contemplating impermanence, if you switch to meditating on the disadvantages of samsara, immediately return to your original object. If a camper wants to start a campfire but becomes distracted by the beautiful scenery and lets the fire diminish, she must begin all over again. Yeah. Have you ever boiled water and then forgotten that you've boiled it and a half an hour later remembered that you were going to make a cup of tea, but now the water's cold? It's not only me that does that. Yeah. So like that. So too, if we want to cultivate concentration, but let our attention wander, we will have to start anew. Yeah, you have to boil the water again because it got cold. While knowing the definitions and functions of the mental factors that interrupt concentration and those that support it is necessary, identifying these in our own experience is essential. It takes time and effort to observe how our mind operates. It takes time and effort. It takes time and effort. Don't expect to have it immediately. Yeah. It takes time and effort to observe how our mind operates, but doing this is the key to making the Dharma come alive for us. Yeah. The more you can watch your mind and like see what it's doing and then automatically begin to, you know, see, oh, is this a virtuous thought? Is this a non-virtuous thought? Is it neutral? Do I want to keep thinking in this direction? Or should I be back? You know, to have that kind of thing going on in our mind where we can be aware of what's going on and then evaluate the mental state. You know, this is what's really important for practice. Yeah. Otherwise, there is danger that our intellectual knowledge of the teachings will simply increase our arrogance rather than decrease our afflictions. Oh, I know the definitions of all the 51 mental factors. Actually, there's 84,000. I know the definitions of 83,000, but I'll get the last 1,000 soon. You know, I'm so great. Yeah. But then you can't even recognize your own arrogance. So, okay, let's see where we are. Let's just pause here for a minute. Are there questions or comments so far? Yeah.
I've never had a problem thinking about introspective awareness before, but tonight it's really striking me that doesn't engaging that take your mind off the object?
That's what happens if you overdo it. Yeah. But it's said to be just a little corner of the mind that it doesn't shout, "Are you on the object? Or are you distracted, you idiot?" No. It doesn't do that. It just kind of pokes its head up and spies. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way to increase introspective awareness?
It's practice. Yeah. It's like, I know we would all prefer a pill, but the scientists are distracted from developing an introspective awareness pill. No, with all these things, it's a matter of practice. You know, I mean, if you want to increase your compassion, you have to practice compassion. Yeah, if you want to increase your introspective awareness, you just have to practice it. Yeah, but not like the thing of, you know, what am I thinking right now? Because that's going to shake your mind too much. Okay. Other questions, comments? Mm-hmm.
But in this case, I have a similar question about introspective awareness. Like, you know, I want a workout routine to make it work, But is it accurate to understand that what His Holiness is saying here, that if you're working on your mindfulness, your introspective awareness kind of comes along as the package?
Yeah, it'll automatically do it. Because if you're focused strongly with mindfulness, then it's easier to recognize when you've gone off. What recognizes you've gone off introspective awareness. Yeah. What?
It's about clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I may be too narrow in my definitions about this, but I can understand or think I can imagine what clarity is with regard to a visualized object. But when I talk about clarity of mind, when I'm trying to concentrate on the breath, which is on the sensations of the body, mm-hmm. it's very confusing to think about clarity in that context. Or are we talking about the nimitta or whatever that's called that arises, that's what you have clarity on when you have advanced?
That's what you have mindfulness on. Clarity is talking about the state of the mind that's meditating. It's not talking about the object. It's talking about the mind is vivid. The mind is interested, it is engaged, it can engage with the object. So it's not that, the Buddha appears in technicolor, and then you say, but I'm watching the breath and there's no color in that, so what's clarity? Because it's not talking about that kind of clarity. Yeah, it's a confusing word to say clarity, because we keep going back to something visual. Mm-hmm. It's talking about the mind. Yeah. Okay, anything else? Okay, we'll continue a little bit. We'll have to stop in the middle of the next section. Okay, so we're on to laxity. Take out your pillows. You can practice this very well. And you can do it even without a pillow. We have some experts in this room. Yeah. Okay. So laxity differs from lethargy. Yeah. Lethargy is a heaviness of body and mind that is close to sleep. Okay. That's what we usually have. Lethargy causes the decline of both stability and clarity. Yeah, the mind is, the clarity is gone because the mind is dull, yeah, and the stability is gone because, you know, you're spacey. You can't keep your mind on the object. So lethargy causes the decline of both stability and clarity. The mind is dull and passive. It may even begin to dream. Have you ever been in the middle of when, as a group, we're chanting prayers, and then you notice that your mind is just starting to dream? Yeah, we're on the second line and already, the second line of the first verse, and already the mind is. Anybody have that? Again, it's not just me. Yeah. Okay, the mind is dull and passive, it may even begin to dream. Lethargy isn't mentioned as one of the five faults because on higher levels of concentration, it is less frequent than laxity. But when laxity is mentioned, lethargy is implied. At initial levels of practice, lethargy is a noticeable object for many people. Yeah. So one person told me that she's been trying the method of putting the water bowl on top of her head and that it's really helped. Yeah. And that the person next to her hasn't gotten wet yet. You'll vouch for that, huh? Okay. Yeah, just don't sit under a pipe that breaks. Yeah. Okay. So the lethargy is, you know, you're just really going drowsy, yeah. Laxity is, you know, you could be kind of on the object, but you're not really on it, you know. I mean, you're on it, it's there, but there's no vividness, there's no clarity, there's no interest, your mind is dull. Yeah, but not so dull that it goes into lethargy. But if you don't catch the laxity, it does go into lethargy. Okay, so lethargy is a big problem, especially when we're beginning to create, you know, meditate to create, to generate serenity. But on higher levels, when we've started, we'll get into the nine stages of sustained attention soon. When you get into those, then you see, oh yeah, you can go beyond lethargy, but there's still, you know, some laxity in there, yeah. And that can become, they talk about subtle laxity being really dangerous because you're on the object, yeah, your mind has a tinge of clarity, but not much. And you think that you've generated serenity because you're still on the object. Okay, so that subtle laxity is very dangerous at the later stages of sustained attention. Yeah, at the beginning, our mind, our obstacles are so gross that we just become lethargic and then clunk, fall asleep. Okay. So at initial levels of practice, lethargy is a noticeable object for many people. Yeah. When coarse laxity is present, there is some stability on the object, but the clarity has decreased. The object doesn't appear so clearly. Now, the object appearing clearly is not because the object's changed. The object appearing clearly is because the mind is clear. Okay. So the object doesn't appear so clearly, and we may start to lose it. Although the mind isn't distracted to another object and isn't drowsy, it lacks force. It remains in a vague state with an agreeable sensation. Perhaps it resembles what my Western friends call spaced out. Yeah. Because the mind has become too withdrawn inside, the antidote to coarse laxity is to enlarge the scope of the meditation object. Make it brighter. Elaborate on the details. Okay. So you have to change how you're apprehending the object if you have coarse laxity. Yeah. Because the mind's too withdrawn inside. Yeah. So you have to enlarge the scope of the meditation object. Make it brighter. Elaborate on the details. If the meditation object is the image of the Buddha, employ analysis to review the details of the Buddha's form. Visualizing bright light filling the room or looking at a light also helps. If coarse laxity persists, temporarily leave the meditation object and contemplate a topic that will elevate your spirits and invigorate your mind. That doesn't mean somebody you're sexually attracted to. That's not the antidote to coarse laxity. Yeah. What His Holiness suggests in the Great Masters, for example, precious human life. You focus on that. That makes your mind happy and joyful. The benefits of concentration, the benefits of bodhicitta. When you think about those, then your mind goes, wow, that's so cool. I mean, imagine being a bodhisattva for a minute. Wouldn't that be incredible? Yeah? However somebody looked at you, Yeah, they could look at you with love, they could look at you with hate. Your mind just remains equanimous and caring. Yeah, somebody praises you, you don't go, oh, I'm wonderful. Somebody criticizes you, you don't go, how dare they? Okay, so the excellent qualities of the three jewels, the benefits of bodhicitta, the benefits of concentration. Yeah, such reflection energizes the mind and makes it joyful. If coarse laxity continues, visualize your spiritual mentor and make a request as described above. Remember the Buddha above your head, and then light coming from the Buddha flowing down, filling your body, mind, and then making a request to the Buddha for inspiration to generate serenity, and then return to your meditation object. Otherwise, stop the session, splash water on your face, take a walk outside, look a long distance at a vista, do prostrations, yeah, run around the block. Okay. So I think this is a good place that we finish coarse laxity. Let's stop before we get into subtle laxity. Okay, other questions, comments? Yeah.
So I understand laxity when you are doing visualization meditation, but what about when the object of meditation is something like the breath?
Well, it's the same thing with laxity. Your mind is not clear on the breath. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How would you enlarge the concentration on the breath?
One thing that you could do is imagine when you're inhaling light and exhaling smoke. Yeah. That will work. Or just making the mind look at like exactly what is going on when you inhale. We usually think inhalation, I've inhaled, but what does it feel like to start the inhalation, to continue it when it's about to end? So look more closely at it like that. Okay.
As the teaching went on, I noticed that you seem to use, when you use humor, it seems to combat my restlessness and laxity during the teachings. I was wondering if, can we apply this to our meditations as well? Can we put humor into our meditations?
Yeah, I think you can. I mean, I know I've done it before. The first example of doing it, it pops into my mind because it's so totally gross. I was in retreat many years ago, and the thought popped up in my mind, oh, I'm really focusing on the object. Really good. I have some stability on the object now. And my teacher, I'm sure he has clairvoyant powers, he can see what a good meditator I am. And when I realized that was going in my mind, I just burst out laughing, you know, because it was so hilarious to think like that. So completely the opposite. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, if your mind is really off on some object of attachment, then you can really ham it up and you imagine you get it, but you get a super duper supercalifragilisticexpialidocious expialidocious version of it. Yeah, so it's not just, you know, you're on the beach, you know, with whoever you're attracted to, but you're on the beach and everything's shimmering and the person just loves you to death and everybody's looking at you with envy and you feel like, you know, king of the world, then you kind of have to laugh at yourself. Yeah. Yeah. You ham it up like that. And it's funny. Okay. Anything else? Okay, so we'll stop here. So please use this in your meditation the coming week. And don't forget it after 1 week.